CliffCentral.com.
Damn right. The weekend and blinding lights. Very nice. Celeste says her mother worked at Fontana and made that chicken for us. I still cannot replicate the recipe. Ah, Celeste, I remember Fontana chicken. That was a hell of a thing. It was also the best meal you could get on your way home from a big night out. Oh, Sia. They used to be all over the place, and I don't know what happened, but they're gone now. They're gone, and it's just a memory. Now that would be worth, I'd pay R1,000 for a Fontana chicken right now. God, they were good. They were so good. Anyway, lots of things to get into this morning. It is Friday as you start your weekend, and plenty of people planning their December holidays too. Some people planning to finish up, to tidy up, to wrap up the year. There's still quite a bit of business going on, but it's definitely quiet. You get the feeling that people are already in holiday mode, you know.
Go ahead. Christmas card.
Oh, you got a Christmas. Well done. I don't even know anybody who sends Christmas cards. I've got two friends in America who are the only two who still send me an actual card. And then my mother stopped. I think she stopped 3 years ago because she used to send Christmas cards that she would make. And they were really nice, and people loved them. Now she paints one, and then she sends it via WhatsApp to everybody.
I like that.
No, it's not the same. There's something nice about Christmas cards. I remember as a kid, we would my parents' whole sitting room was just filled with cards from people all over the world who were sending them Christmas wishes. It was really special.
Yeah, we would put them on the baby grand, and it would take up the whole piano. Yeah. We had so many.
Right.
When you were tickling the ivories.
Yeah, Leanne doesn't. She still does that from time to time.
Yeah.
Tickles the ivories.
But I was thinking of, it's that time of year now where, yes, fingering the piano. Thanks,
yes,
guys.
That's the one. Yeah,
I was thinking about, it's that time of the year where everyone starts losing energy, and it's like, it's the temperature's hot, we're tired, we're sick of going to the office, and then I thought, but we haven't been going to the office.
Yeah.
But we're still tired. We've been through such a traumatic year.
Yeah, but I think that's a big heap of shit. Come on. There are people who actually go through a lot of trouble in their lives, and there are some people, you know, we talk about 16 days of activism. There are women who are actually living with men who are hitting them at the moment and that kind of thing. It would feel not only extremely ungrateful, just a little bit insensitive to think about. I don't prescribe to that notion of yours. So it's November. We've worked hard. I get what Leanne is saying. I'm not attacking her for her point of view here. But honestly, you know, if you've survived, if you've actually got a job, if you have, if you own or rent your place and you're not being evicted, if you have enough money for food, you really should just be very quiet at the moment. There are people who are genuinely suffering. Don't tell me, November, we're all tired. I'm not tired. I'm not tired. I have plenty of time and energy left for the rest of this year, and I'm ready to work hard. I really am. And I think,
if I just think about what's happened in the last year personally, I've lost a family member to suicide. My dad was involved in that hit and run.
Yeah.
My dad had a heart attack on Monday morning. He's still in hospital, and he's one of the fittest people you'll ever know. And what's interesting is that his fitness is actually making it more difficult to fix his heart because his heart's enlarged.
Really?
Yeah. I lost my job. If I just think of all of that, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm exhausted.
Look, individually, I suppose that we all have something to, and yours are very valid complaints. I'm not dismissing them. But I do think there's always someone worse off than you.
And, yeah, of course.
You've got to be grateful for the little things.
Should it put things into perspective when you think about someone else who's worse off than you? Yes.
Mm.
But also what you go through is what you're currently going through.
Sure.
So even if it's
I mean, maybe we were talking about Elon Musk this morning. Maybe he's got things that are really bothering him, and you know, he's upset about a couple of things that didn't go his way this year. Who are we to say that that he's not allowed to feel that way? And if you ask
when Bezos had to go through that divorce and lose half of his fortune, that must have been horribly painful. Is he living on noodles for a month?
Sure.
No, but it's still painful. So I don't, using that analogy of yours, I think it's kind of saying, no, Bezos, keep quiet.
No. I would never tell, I can never tell anyone how to feel. It's none of my business how you feel. And I have no right to tell you what to feel or what to think. You know, there could be someone who lives on top of a rubbish dump right now who's jumping and dancing for joy. Maybe they're high as a kite. Maybe they're really enjoying their life. I don't know. It's got nothing. You can't judge others, but what you can do is be aware of your own life. Be aware of your own wins and losers. And by that, I mean, I wake up and I'm grateful to be alive. I'm happy it's the end of the year. I'm excited about December, even though I don't have anything particularly exciting planned. I'm just excited about the holidays and summer and, you know, little things. And and I do feel like it's easy for us, even if we've got really good reasons. And Leanne, you have good reasons to be exhausted and be a little pissed off with the year. I mean, all of humanity has a reason to be pissed off with this year. 2020 has been so hard. But I do wake up every day and I'm just grateful to be alive. And I'm grateful to be mostly healthy.
And we need to hear that sort of thing from people. So thank you for that. It's good to know that you're feeling energetic and happy and looking forward to the future. It really is good, and it makes sense.
I was going to lead an aerobics class just there, and we run out of time, so.
I was going to say, Leanne, Gareth and I are kind of like the devil and the angel on either side of your shoulders. No. I'm going to say, you can feel very shitty right now, okay? I say, just feel a little shitty.
Yeah, but like you said before, Sia, let people not fall into the trap of thinking that everything's going to change as soon as the clocks turn to 2021.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time.
That's what I'm just reminding myself.
Guys, did we talk about the 2-in-1 cheese slice that they're making? The Poloni, the Poloni flavored full cream processed cheese? I think we did cover
a little about it on Wednesday, yeah.
Someone sent me a picture of it. It's an actual thing. It's not made. I thought it was bullshit. I thought you guys were joking, but the 2-in-1 cheese slice is a thing. Poloni flavored
American
full cream cheese. Look here.
Mm-mm.
Yes, Poloni flavored full cream cheese.
No, I don't want that.
No, look,
instantly
put
me in the vomitorium.
People have a slice of Poloni and they put cheese on top of it and they put it in a salami. But the fact that it's now together just doesn't sit well with me. Also, the fact that like when I was growing up, I loved a peanut butter and jam sandwich, but you know, when you get it together in a bottle and you just see the swirliness of it both combined.
Oh, that was, Goober grape that you could get from America, which was like peanut butter and jelly mixed in one jar. But no, there's a lot of processed stuff going on with Poloni and cheese, hey?
It's disgusting.
I think I'd rather have I'd rather have them separately and possibly rather a salami and a good cheese.
There's a lot of processed stuff in general. Even to just find out that in the States they have cheese in a can.
Yes.
And it's just like whipped cream. You can sort of just spray it out.
Yeah.
You can also get cheese. Let's also be for real. That's not cheese. That's some yellow goo.
No, exactly. The Americans use a lot of processed cheese in everything. Mm. Like any vegetable dish they make, any pasta, in goes all of the processed cheese.
Well,
yeah, right now it's Thanksgiving for people in the States and a lot of people who are follow in the States, and they've just been making mac and cheese I just look at that and I go, that is so processed. There's nothing cheesy or mackie about that.
There are a lot of people who are arguing with me and some who are agreeing. Courtney says, I agree, Gareth. Every day I wake up grateful for what I have. Amy says, I don't think you should compare people who've had difficult lives to those who live in comfort. People process difficulty, anxiety, and stress differently. I think that's a very good point. Marco says, no, Gareth, we don't all have to have lost a limb to feel tired and spent at this time of year. Agreeing with you, Leanne. Nikita says, being grateful and acknowledging that things have been tough are not necessarily independent of each other. They can coexist. Very good point,
yeah,
too.
I think that's where I am.
Yeah,
I can definitely see the good, and I know that things are going to improve. I'm excited.
And
but I'm tired.
Gregory says he's going to buy me the processed polony-flavored cheese as a Christmas present. No, I think I'll be all right, hey? I think that'll stay at the if you send it here for delivery, it'll stay in that parcel until 2023, and then it'll really taste
right.
funky, right?
Do you still receive those biltong gift baskets from your aunt?
No, she's dead.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
No, what a relief. Are you kidding?
Oh, no.
No, I'm thrilled. It's just, it was really, she did us all a favor by...
Do you want me to take over her role?
No, please.
I can start sending them to you.
No, I'm good.
Saying,
she got what she deserved for that shit present.
I had a friend whose aunt came by and... She was just a very weird person, and she drove past my friend's house,
yeah,
and then phoned her and said, I've thrown your present over the wall, and she literally thrown over a box of crockery. Everything was broken.
Oh, that's so stupid.
That is ridiculous.
So when I think of straight aunts and their strange gifts, those two aunts come to mind, the biltong and the crockery.
Yeah, well, just like your aunt and the biltong, Gareth, my grandmother it started off very sweet and was a great childhood memory of mine. She always made a great fruitcake. But years later, it's kind of like, thank you, we love it, we appreciate it, but we can't have fruitcake every single Christmas time. And she still makes it. My other cousins and even like some of my aunts now can tell, like, flat out, like, no, this is too much now, this is getting yucky. But I still feel bad, so she
makes it for you.
And two of my other cousins are the one who still want to be nice to her, so we have this skedonk of a fruitcake.
I know some people love it, but I don't.
So, you know, 25 years of that, I go, come on now. But I don't have the heart to tell her.
You do realize, like, fruitcake is one of the few things that you can keep for years and you can still eat it. My father, and this drives my mother crazy, he loves fruitcake. So every year he'll make one and he'll do the icing and it's his thing. He's by no means a chef, but there's some things that my dad does in the kitchen that he just loves. He makes great hamburgers. So he'll do that every couple of months for us as a kind of family thing. But he loves making a fruitcake. So he buys the minced fruit and he does the icing and, you know, the marzipan or whatever it is. I don't know how they make these things.
Yeah, it is marzipan.
He does a little just for him because no one else eats this fucking stuff. He just loves it. He loves it. So she said to him about a month ago, she goes, oh, I suppose you're going to make your fucking fruitcake again. Absolutely, I'm going to.
Fruitcake, it should be. Then I don't mind like a panettone.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's pretty good. And that also keeps you 4 months.
It's also light. The kind of fruitcake my dad makes are these heavy. I think it's like your grand makes here. Heavy. If you eat a spoonful of it, you're full, kind of thing.
It's decadent.
Yeah.
Heavy. Too much going in there. So now I know between my two cousins and I, we get a massive, thick portion of it. It's a chunk to go home with. And that thing will...
That's the biggest delay ever.
Oh, yeah.
So you're still busy with that sentence, and it's like 3 minutes later. I thought it was just, it's obviously his connection.
4 months on.
There it comes.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was my fruitcake story not good.
No, your fruitcake story was so shit that the internet decided to embargo it.
Yes.
Yeah, the little men sitting in rooms upstairs sorting out what goes through the internet and not said a hard no to that.
Yeah, fruitcake not happening.
Connor says, I hate fruitcake. I don't mind the inside, but the icing is way too sweet for me. I agree with that. Anushka says, you guys just made me do something. I bought an air fryer online. At least it's marked all the way down. I hope Milex is a good brand. Yes, today is Black Friday. So today is the day where you get discounts. But I think you have to go into the shops today. On Monday is Black Monday, or what do they call it?
Cyber Monday,
where you get to buy stuff online a lot cheaper. But who knows? I see a lot of companies are doing the whole week. So basically, if you'd bought anything from Monday to Monday, you get a reduced price.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it's blurred this year because people are online shopping anyway. So I bet you those specials run online as well.
Hmm. We've talked a lot about food in the last half hour, so maybe we should move on, making people hungry. Derek says, morning, everybody. Today is the first time watching. I haven't woken up this early since working home from March. How did I do this every day? Yeah, a lot of people have been waking up later because they don't have to deal with traffic. So you still get to the office at, let's say you started at 9 before, but now you could wake up at 8 instead of at 5:30, you know. So I think that's probably true for a lot of people. You know, little things like that are going to be very difficult for us to get back to if we ever do get back to it. A lot of people are looking at all the negative things from 2020 and saying, oh, it's been a shit year, and it has. I get you. But, man, there's some positives. Traffic.
Oh, definitely.
Sure.
The amount of time and money saved on driving. And even now, I need at least two reasons to get into my car and drive somewhere. If it's just one, I'm like, no, I'm sorry. It's not worth it.
Yes.
So we had an in-person meeting at the office yesterday. It was the team at the office.
Yeah.
I was 5 minutes late. Two other people were about 15 minutes late. And part of it, we realized our meeting was meant to start at one. Part of it was because we aren't accustomed to driving anymore. Mm. And specifically at that time, it's like, oh, no, wait, there's like kids get out of school. And so the parents are there and that's what's causing traffic. Or some people have like afternoon traffic. That's like, all right. Oh, shucks. These things still happen. There are other people and there are a lot of people on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do love the fact that you can really plan your entire day now. Before, even if you had a schedule and you had certain meetings and things, you kind of would fit your shopping or your gym or anything else, you'd fit that into the in-between parts. Now you can plan your whole day so that you do everything between, let's say, 10 and 1. And then the rest of the day on either side, you can do meetings or you can be at home or you can, you know, sort out your files or tidy up or make the calls that you need to do. I like that about it. And then, to be perfectly honest, this is the kind of lifestyle in terms of lockdown that I think a lot of people have been trying to get their whole lives.
Yeah, and I think the key there is the fact that we are utilizing so much more of our time.
Yes.
Once you take out this
I agree with
driving
that.
And traffic thing.
I agree with that. Like now I can churn out the work that I would sit in the office, because in the office you are constantly interrupted by people and, you know, someone is checking on this or someone needs to know that or someone needs a sign off on this. Now I'm getting a lot more done. And I find there's also much more free time. But anyway, I mean, this is probably stuff everyone's discovering. So in a little while, I'm going to be joined by a guy called Kevin Derrick. He owns a business called Creative Rides. He's collected more than 140 cars in his lifetime. Now, I've seen shows with people like Jay Leno and Jerry Seinfeld where they have warehouses full of cars. Apparently, if Jay Leno decides to drive every one of his cars, he could drive for 3 years Every day you could have a different car. Every day you could have a different car. Now, I mean, to me, that's just insane. But, you know, on a Friday, we usually talk to George Meany, and we're going to speak to George today. But I thought we'd talk to Kevin, find out about his car collection. And and he's going to tell us about it. But actually, Louis Kutz is the guy who collects the classic cars. And his whole car collection is being put on auction. And it's being called one of the most spectacular car collections in the world. They got Porsches and Cadillacs and all kinds of things. And Kevin Derrick is part of the team who's putting it together. And we'll find out all about that.
How do you even get to collect 140 cars?
Hey, I collect stuff, so I can tell you it's very easy. I collect books. I collect swords. I collect coins. I collect chemical elements. I mean, when you get into
it. Yeah, I thought about you actually. I was watching a video on people's crazy collections, and one of them was a periodic table of elements, but the elements were actually there. So I thought about you with that. Another woman in Australia collected, you know, when you kind of, it's like a taxidermy thing, but with insects.
Oh, no, that's
weird. She collected all of the insects she's found in her house, and she has these walls of exotic, huge bugs and spiders and things. I looked at a lot of these and I thought, damn, I haven't collected anything. And it feels almost too late to start unless you inherit a collection of thimbles or spoons or coins. Although I did collect stamps, but I gave
those. The hardest part of any collection is the first couple of purchases, because you think, oh, well, you know, this is going to cost too much or it's going to be too difficult to do. But once you get cracking, it's very easy. And then you start, it becomes a lifelong thing. I mean, some of the things I want to collect, I'll never be able to afford, ever. And some of them, one of the only reasons that I will work for all of my life and I will try to make as much money as possible is not because I just want to live comfortably or because I want to buy presents for people or I want to help fund causes that I care about, but also because I'd like to complete some of these collections. And some of them are really, really hard to complete because they just carry on and on and on. You can never have enough in a collection to make it, like if you're collecting classic cars, I mean, that's a lifelong business, something that you never
start. Think the idea as well should be that you should have a child or a nephew or someone who's interested in it as well, get them interested so that they can continue it after you're gone.
But also be careful what you collect, party people, because I remember being in PE once and I was staying in a B&B. Well, I think that sets the scene well enough. And the B&B owner had collected these porcelain dolls.
Uh-oh.
On paper, it's a gorgeous thing. But when you sleep in a room, you have to wake up in the middle of the night and there's just like three shelves of these porcelain dolls. You don't wake up at midnight and want to admire their beauty. You're thinking, these things are going to come alive.
Yeah, they're
going to strangle me today.
There are people, I mean, you've got to also be careful that there's a very, very fine line, and sometimes it's a gray area, between people who collect things and people who just hoard stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was thinking of one of the collections that I saw as well was a woman who's collected cuckoo clocks. Hmm. Now, she's had them, she maintains all of them.
Wow.
So they're cleaned every day and they...
Wow.
The mechanisms are serviced and she winds them up and they're all displayed. If you can imagine the A line of your house, of the roof, they're all displayed on the outside of the house in this A line frame. And then you get somebody who just has them half in boxes or, just lying in dust and they're broken and they're not working. And if you're going to be a connector, you need to do it properly.
Those people are just hoarders.
Yeah.
I've got to be. You see, that's also why I don't have a storeroom. I do not have a storeroom in my house. I have cupboards, and they're always organized because I'm anal about these things and obsessive compulsive to a very unhealthy degree. But I don't have a storeroom where I just throw all the stuff that I can't find another place for. When you start doing that, when you have a room that you just put stuff in, and you're not using that stuff, then you've probably either got too much of it or you're just a messy person. So that's there's my bit of judgment for the morning, for what it's worth.
Although I look at my gran on my dad's side, she was an orphan. She was totally abandoned by her parents, and she grew up in a Jewish orphanage, which was so weird because she wasn't Jewish, but she adopted the Jewish lifestyle for the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. But she, because of having nothing, started collecting things and filling rooms with beautiful designer clothing and designer linen and furniture and that sort of thing. And she needed to hang on to that. But it's almost understandable from coming from nothing and wanting more.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of why some people collect. My uncle was a collector, says Janet. Going to his house was an amazing experience. We spent a lot of time there. Among his collections were 8 vintage cars and his Murano glass collection. We weren't able to keep the cars when he passed on, as they were left to other people, but I'm so honored to have some of his glass. It's great and the memories are awesome. There is a thin line between collecting items and being a hoarder, says Monwa BC. He's obviously got experience of that. And Grigory says, in the ancient empire of Russia, Rasputin collected things too. He collected syphilis from different people.
Good morning.
Hey, morning, Kevin. How are you doing, dude?
What a note to come in on.
How are you keeping?
Yeah, good. Good, good, good. So, Kevin, we were just talking about collections, and you guys are about to auction off an incredible collection of cars. Louis Kutzer, tell me about who Louis Kutzer was and how he ended up collecting so many cars.
I suppose collecting cars can be a little bit of a sickness to certain individuals.
Like any
and many of us have the sickness. So Uncle Louis lived in Bloemfontein and operated around Free State area. Mm-hmm. And I think what's good about that is it's a very dry climate for cars. So cars that rust in dry climates, that's a very good thing. And he obviously started at a very young age, like we all do as boys and some girls, playing with little toy cars. I'm sure your mom and dad bought you cars when you were small.
Sure.
And that develops into a passion in time.
Yes.
And he started buying hubcaps and doing other odds and sods. And as he grew in stature, he was able to swap out cars and start a collection of cars. And he was collecting cars for probably some 45 odd years. And that just amassed into a collection of well over 400 motor cars.
Sure.
My God. Now, when you own 400 motor cars, and obviously he didn't own all 400 all his life, so he would have sold some and bought others, and that's what happens with collections, is they're always moving. But owning cars is slightly different to owning like a glass collection, for example, because cars have to be driven and have to be maintained. And if they just sit in a warehouse, that's not necessarily good for them, right? When you're working out the value of a collection or the value of a certain car, it's important that the thing be in working order, and it's important that it be in the best possible condition.
Yes, of course it's important that those things happen. What you would have found with this collection is that a portion of the collection, around 350 cars, were working drivable cars. You would have found that many of the cars were duplicates to be utilized to upgrade and maintain others. So he would have bought 2 Mercs. One would have been in a poor condition, but you know, he's got a windscreen, he's got lights, he's got headlights, he's got parts that he could utilize. So he was very, very, very astute with how he did this over a long period of time. But I mean, ultimately, you would have also found he would have driven as many of these as possible. And he also had a maintenance team. So his maintenance team would have, through a period, gone through each car, serviced the car, checked that the car was up and running, and not necessarily used the cars, but certainly kept them in as good a maintained condition as possible.
Wow.
So, I mean, wouldn't you have to disconnect the batteries or start each car every day?
Absolutely. So, yes, you would have found batteries disconnected, you would have found battery charges on cars. So like us all, you know, so we all have a favorite. Whatever we have and we collect and we love, we generally have favorites. Call it favorite friends, favorite cars, you know, favorite soccer teams.
Sure.
You know, pick
favorite
a number.
Kids.
Absolutely. Well, don't go there. Go there. So ultimately what you would have found is he would have kept his favorites, some 30 or 40 or 50 cars closer to him, and better maintained because he would have used them more often than others.
Right. I'm curious, what's your favorite car in this collection, and which cars do you think people are going to be most interested in at the auction? Because, you know, there are cars and there are cars. Some of these you probably could get anywhere, and some of them are very rare.
So what was really fascinating about Uncle Louis and his collection, and we, as we grow up in life, we change. So we develop new interests, we do develop new loves, we study things, we see things. But what he ended up with was he had a great love for American muscle car and classics of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and he had a great love for Mercedes-Benz. So half his collection was Mercedes-Benzes. And I'll give you an example of that. Just so he liked station wagons. Now, we're not all station wagon people. If you drive around town, you won't even see a lot of station wagons going to. It's kind of a family mommy car type of thing.
Absolutely. But what a horrible car to collect.
But how's this? From 1954, 56, he had every single station wagon that Mercedes made right up until 2010. So he would have had these in a row. There are some of them that you've never even seen. You know, they're just so rare, you would never see them. So ultimately, when he did this originally, they may not have been that rare, but over time, they've all become super rare, and they become highly collectible cars. And I suppose that's what collecting is really all about and the fun of it.
Jeez. I mean, a station wagon. I wouldn't get out of bed to go and buy a station wagon at half price. So you're gonna sell these to a very particular kind of person. But I suppose the collection as a whole is very valuable. And then, of course, you can sell off individual cars too. Do you think it's possible someone could come in and buy the whole lot?
I don't think someone will come and buy the whole lot for the reason, Gareth, exactly what you've said. You know, people are specific. And don't forget that collecting cars and loving cars is also a very emotional thing. So, you know, my mom drove me to school in a Beetle. So when I have the means one day, I'll buy a Beetle. Or my next-door neighbor had the most amazing, you know, let's call it BMW 3 Series, and you wanted one of those in your life. So it's a very emotional thing. My dad, my dad's car, you know, was an Impala. My first car was an MGA. Or whatever they may have been, we all have connections to these type of cars, and those connections turn into a love for them, and ultimately that's why we end up buying them. That's an emotional purchase very often. Mm. And then that emotional purchase also has value attached to it. So what then tends to happen is, depending on what we're buying, and now we're not talking about Rolls Royces, Bentleys, Aston Martins, Ferraris. Most of these things are way out of our league to actually go and try and purchase and to collect. So quite often, It's more the man in the street type of car. Right. So go back into the 60s, a Fintel Mercedes-Benz, a 70s Mercedes-Benz. There's something that is collectible today and affordable today to the man in the streets, and yet it's growing in its value as well. So it's got nice value to grow.
Are you expecting a lot of international collectors to take an interest in this auction?
I think we are, yes. And the reason for that is there are one or two very, very rare and fantastic older Mercedes-Benzes in this. So we've got a 54 vehicle in there, and we've got a 58 Dora in this collection. Now, if I have a good look at what they are, you know, in their day, they are what today's Maybach would have been. So you would have had royalty driving in these motor cars. You would have had heads of state driving in these cars. You would have had seriously wealthy families driving in these type of cars.
Wow.
Now, obviously, like any cars, so in 10 years' time, a Maybach is not going to be as expensive as it is today. But as it drops off in terms of its value, at some point in time, if it's a super collectible car, it turns to get to the bottom of its turn, it then starts growing in its value. So if you are watching this over time, there are cars on the streets today that in 10 years' time will be collectible classic cars. They will become modern classics.
Have you ever seen a really shit car, like something that none of us want? You know, we always joke about a brown Datsun, for example.
A Fiat Multipla.
Or a Fiat Multipla. Oh, what a horrible car. Now, they don't make those anymore. But if you had one of those, have you ever seen one that's gone up tremendously in value just because they became exceedingly rare?
All right, so the rules are the following, just quick, and they're going to be pretty rude, so bear with me.
Go on.
Okay, so the rules are this. If it's red, in other words, if it's a Ferrari, so and that's no slight on any other red car, so believe me.
Sure.
If it's red, if it has two doors, and if the top goes down, it'll always have value. So apply that to anything. So walk into a Mercedes-Benz facility today. Walk into a Volvo facility today. Walk into a BMW facility. Choose any car, any make of car. The most expensive car on the floor is going to be the top-end soft-top sports car. Nowadays, they're hard and soft-tops.
Right.
The second most expensive car is always going to be a two-door, but a family four-seater car. Thereafter, you get a four-door with a pillar. And the same applies to collecting classics. A four-door car with a pillar in it is an inexpensive car. It was inexpensive in its day.
What's a pillar? Just, I hate to say it.
In other words, that nice steel pillar between the two doors. If you wind the windows down, there's a pillar in the middle that holds everything up.
Nobody wants that.
So remember, all of us drive pillared cars.
Yes.
Do you think that's what a pillared car is? So if you go back to 1959, an Impala that's got a four-door and it's a pillar will be the cheapest of the range. So that still applies today with cars, and it applies going backwards in time, unless it was really, really super rare and very few of them were ever made.
I've learned things this morning. This is amazing. Now, isn't it true that Louis, who collected all these cars, also owned Puk Buerta's 300 SE sedan, and he even owned King Moshweshwe of Lesotho's 600 Grosser limousine? Is that true?
It's very true. Yes.
Are those part of the collection going on sale, or have those already been sold?
They have both already been sold.
Very good. Some very interesting cars here, though. I mean, there's an anti-apartheid activist and businessman called David Beresford Pratt's car, and a 1967, you mentioned the Fintail station wagon, a 1957 Mercedes-Benz Ponton 109 station wagon, believed to be the only model of its kind in the country. It's amazing. So where can we, I mean, I'm not going to come and buy a station wagon from you, but there might be some interesting things to see here. How does the auction take place? Is it all online?
The auction will take place online. Mm-hmm. It can also be via telephone and also physically in the Creative Ride showroom. And the auction house that's driving this is High Street Auction, a very professional group of individuals.
Right.
And we've teamed up with them to really make this into something that really works right across the country. The exciting part, I think, Gareth, for us is that, remember, these cars were all sitting in two or three gigantic warehouses, not really loved and appreciated by everybody because they were in one individual's environment. So now we are going to see all of these cars in time, in collectors' hands, in enthusiast hands, and we're going to see them on the road because we're sharing them with everybody. And I'm quite sure that old Uncle Louis would actually love to see that in time.
Well, listen, good luck. Go and look up Creative Rides, and we'll put up a link on cliffcentral.com too. The auction takes place on the 5th of December, 2020. It's a really cool collection. Love it. Thank you so much for letting us know.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks, Gareth.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah. Good to see you.
Cheers.
There we go. Isn't that cool? Well, there we go. What would you collect if you had unlimited funds?
Well, I actually had my grandmother's, I think it was a 1985 325i BMW in red with two doors. And that was very popular. It was actually my husband bought it from her, and it had 30,000 Ks on the clock when he bought it. And it had become vintage. And wherever we drove, people would stop us. Any petrol station we were at, people would stop us and say, "Are you selling this car? I collect cars. Can I have it?"
Oh, wow.
So we had that for a while. And I always said to him when we got divorced, if you do want to sell the car, please let me know because I'd like to keep it in the family. It was in mint condition.
Wow.
And he sold it without telling me.
Son of a bitch.
But it went to somebody who collects cars, and so they'll look after it. That's the only consolation. And then my grandfather had also in red a Mercedes station wagon, which was enormous, this enormous hunk of metal. And then he also had it was somewhere in the 60s, like a 1963 or 65 Mercedes sports car in British racing green.
Do you know?
And that one my dad drove his sister to her wedding in. And when he got home after the wedding, he drove so slowly at night time with all of us in the car. And we got home at night. He drove into the garage to park it, and he drove over a rake, which then flung over and dented the roof of the car.
No.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, lots of collector stories. I mean, my family also had American cars, Buicks, these enormous combis that were American left-hand drive white wall tires.
I'm blown away by the fact that someone would ever collect station wagons. I mean, I don't...
It's crazy.
Right, you see, they're really... Thank God we are all different people and we all have different tastes, because if you gave me a station wagon collection, it would be sold before I even had it in my hands.
Yeah.
Station wagons. George.
It's a special thing. If no one else is doing it, then it's special.
George, would you buy station wagons and collect them if you had unlimited resources?
No.
See, neither would I.
That's a straight and simple answer.
See, before we move into more car things with George, if you could collect anything, what would you collect?
Yeah, I was thinking about it. Don't know. I'm not so attached to material things. So nothing really. I would buy specific items from history and things that I value, but I don't see myself collecting a bunch of stuff. No.
You could collect your aunt's fruitcakes.
Your grandmother's.
Over the years.
No, that's not happening.
But doesn't your mother...
Because they will stay around, actually.
Doesn't your mother collect, like, Princess Diana memorabilia?
Yeah, and that's all just different mementos, like there's plates, there's key rings. But I still wouldn't do that either. No.
All right. Well, let's get on to this morning with George. How are you doing, George Meany? George Meany is the CEO of Auto Trader, and we chat with George once a week to find out what's going on in the world of cars and motoring and the lifestyle around it. And this morning, as with every morning, George has got a bunch of really interesting things to tell us. That guy's collection sounds like an amazing assortment of cars, huh?
It does. The funny thing is, Gareth, I've been in this industry now for going on 2 decades, and I've never heard of that collection.
Amazing. And this is some dude in Bloemfontein who collected, during his life, over 400 cars.
Yeah, I was listening. It's unbelievable. Like 400, but 400 what sounds like everyday cars.
Yeah, like, I mean, again, it just boggles my mind, but fucking station wagons, of all things.
Mm. Well, I mean, it is the Free State.
Station wagon. All right. Well, what do you got for us today?
You've got to carry sheep and those things.
Put them in the back of the station wagon, yeah.
George, we get it. Don't get the Free Staters on your back there.
No, I like the Free Staters. All of our Miss South Africans, haven't they come from, well, not all of them, but a lot of them, haven't they come from like places like Bloemfontein?
Yes, many.
I'm not going to redeem you.
And it's the besides Cape Town, the biggest student hangout in South Africa. So I'm sure it's
Free
pretty cool.
Start. Very nice.
On to buying cars during the pandemic. I mean, I don't know, Gareth, would you be nervous to go to a dealership and of getting the virus? Would you rather shop and get the car delivered to you? In buying a car, I know you don't want to drive, or should I say own cars in the future, but if you had to buy a car, would you want to forego the dealership visit?
You know, I think it's important if you buy clothes or you buy cars or even certain other pieces of equipment that you're very particular about, you know, the feel of them. I think it's important to have the tactile experience and to actually get into the car, to take it for a test drive. Because while you guys do a huge amount of work and research, and you make sure that everything you list and that all the dealers that you have on your books are good, honest people, I think for many of us, it's still the feeling that persuades us to buy something, not just everything else, you know?
Well, you know, like you were talking about earlier on, it's a very emotional purchase. I mean, I agree. I don't think the dealership is going anywhere anytime soon because of that fact. But people do seem to want to spend less time there.
You know, the other thing, George, is that a car costs quite a lot of money. It's not like buying a pair of socks. If you buy the wrong pair of socks and they cost you 40 Rand, then you're not going to cry over that for weeks and weeks and weeks. But if you buy the wrong car, or the color isn't exactly what you thought it would be, or, you know, maybe the engine doesn't perform.
But the driving experience.
Yeah. I think that you have huge buyer's remorse if you don't get exactly what you want with a car. Whereas with other stuff, it's maybe less important to you.
I absolutely agree. So this one customer of ours, DigiCars, in Sandton. If you just drive up Sandton, into Sandton on the corner of Grayston and Catherine, DigiCars there. They have taken, not having to come into the dealership until you're ready to really test drive a car seriously. If you go onto DigiCars' website, you can actually virtually go and test drive the car.
Okay. Well, that's terrific. I love it.
Which I haven't seen in South Africa yet.
No, I think that's very cool.
You know, I haven't seen that by dealerships in South Africa. And not only that, they're one of the few dealers that will actually deliver the car to you rather than you having to come into the dealership.
Yeah, you see, that's brilliant. The more of this, the more options we give to consumers, the better. And someone will find the formula that works best for them, whether you're on the customer side or on the dealer side. And whatever works best for both is the one that will survive the longest.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, we've introduced 360 photographs on our website where, you know, you can thumb and do a 360-degree walk around of the car. Mm-hmm. You can even go in the car and do a 360-degree view of the car.
Yeah.
Not all customers have taken it up, but a lot of consumers want these things so that they can spend less time inside the dealership. Although you're absolutely right, the need to actually go and touch and feel that car at some point is a necessity. Mm. You have to end up doing that.
Yeah, I think it's important. Some stuff you'll never need to go and check yourself, but other things, it's kind of the most important part of it, and that's the experience that'll make it all sensible. Okay.
Well, today is Black Friday.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have over 500 cars on special on Auto Trader's website. So if you're looking for a good deal, go and check it out. What do you think? I mean, everybody talks about texting and driving,
mm-hmm.
but a bit of research was done. A study by IAM RoadSmart was done, and they wanted to see what other activities inside a car, what effect this has on driver reaction times. And it's fascinating that fiddling with things like Android Auto or Apple CarPlay.
Mm-hmm.
Reduces your reaction times by over 50%.
That makes sense.
Ooh.
And they in the study they found that people that get distracted and fiddle with things like Apple CarPlay and Android Auto stop in 4 to 5 more car lengths than somebody that's actually concentrating. So if you hit the brakes 4 to 5 car lengths, you will be delayed because of this fiddling by the car.
I love the fact that we've got all this technology in cars, but we've got to admit honestly that we are very stupid creatures and we're easily distracted, and driving requires full concentration all of the time. And if you're on long journeys or you're doing the same trip every day and you're just bored with it and you think you know it like the back of your hand, your brain eventually starts to map that as being a time where you can do other things.
Yeah.
And we do. We start doing other things, and of course it's dangerous. And, you know, whether it's Apple CarPlay or messaging somebody or going through podcasts to find the right one, all of those things are probably a really bad idea when you're at the controls of a ton of metal, and you can kill yourself if you make a bad decision. But you know what humans are like. I mean, we take risks. We do a quick analysis in our brain. What is the risk? What is the reward? Oh, I really want to hear that song, or I want to see what this message is from this friend of mine. And then you lose concentration for a second, and it can be all for naught, you know?
All for naught. And you put other people's lives in danger. I mean, the same study showed that on average, a user or a driver takes their eyes off the road because of all of these electronics inside the car for an average of 16 seconds at a time.
Jeez.
And you count to 16. That is
a long time.
Very long time. 16
seconds. A lot can change in front of you in 16 seconds, yeah.
So while, you know, you and I might be avid non-texters and try and concentrate, there are hundreds of cars around you and these things are happening.
Listen, invariably, if you are driving around, and I've been guilty of this, I'm by no means saying, you know, I'm purer and cleaner and better than you. But I have seen cars driving badly, and you can almost guarantee to a man when you drive past them eventually, you see they're on their phones.
Mm. Yeah. No, you're right.
Well, and also not to make an excuse, can our phones get better to recording, like that dictation thing? Because right now, that we try that doesn't work now.
So this is, as a matter of interest, I wasn't going to bring this up, Sia, but the same study showed that the voice activation devices inside the car reduces your concentration by 36%.
So even that's not.
Oh, so it still takes you away. Yeah,
still takes your mind away. So you know. Onto a lighter note. So the five future car tech features that will keep you safe. So you know that Volvo is introducing the speed limit, or should I say the limit to their cars to 180 kilometers an hour.
So in other words, there's a governor on it.
There's a governor on it. You know, it doesn't matter how fast the car can go. You can only go 180 kilometers
an
hour.
They won't let you take that governor off.
No, they won't let you take the governor off, which I think is a good thing. I mean, where would you want to travel even 180 kilometers an hour with all the cars on? I mean, maybe the autobahn.
But, yeah. George, when the killer is chasing you, you need to speed away.
Typical of Sia to think about the killer. Yeah, all right.
It happens.
So what they also want to begin introducing is, to the topic that we just spoke about, is distraction and intoxication. Is to start to track people's pupils, people's reactions, their movements of their eyes, in order to try and predict whether a driver is concentrating or not. And then put safety measures in place that you can't override inside the car or with the car.
All right,
I think it's a good thing, given all of the new flipping little features we have in all the cars that we're getting.
Listen, if Volvo want to make that, maybe it's a feature, not a bug.
That's very true. Yeah. That's very true.
Mm. Some people will buy the car, especially because they know it can't go faster than 180.
Imagine being an 18-year-old and you're gifted that as your first car. I think you'd be sort of pissed, just like, ah.
Oh, it's better than one of Wim Louis' station wagons, I tell you that much.
I don't know if you've heard about this phenomenon in Dubai, abandoned supercars.
Yes.
I've seen those videos.
Is that a real thing? Because I was.
It's a real thing. So limited edition Ferrari Enzo was abandoned not so long ago. I mean, you can see multiple Lamborghinis, Porsches, Bentleys abandoned in the desert. Some 2,000 to 3,000 cars are abandoned each year in Dubai. Just abandoned.
Jeez. Why?
Well, it turns out that, I mean, this particular story around the Ferrari Enzo, which costs 20 million rand, it was just abandoned. It was a wealthy, wealthy person that came to Dubai for all of the trappings of, making money and getting more wealthy, and lost everything, fled the country because he couldn't make the repayments.
Got you.
He bought the car on finance, and that's what happens with most of these abandonments is people just can't make the payments, and apparently you can land in jail.
Jesus. Well, I suppose if it comes to you either abandon your car or you get locked up in jail, I think that it makes sense to then abandon the car.
Mm. So they abandon the car and they just flee the UAE.
Sure.
So it's an absolute real thing. And then the top 100 fastest cars from 0 to 100
mm-hmm.
at the moment. And what takes the cake is the Porsche 919 hybrid can do 0 to 100 in 1.9 seconds.
Oof. That is explosive.
It's very explosive. I mean, I think the Tesla Roadster is going to beat that, but it's not on the roads yet.
So, you know, 0 to 100 is always the hallmark for how fast a car is. It's how quickly you can get to 100 kilometers an hour, 100 miles an hour. And this has always been the measure that people have used. But really, it's not that helpful because if you can get to 100 kilometers in a second, that means you covered an enormous amount of distance, and it could be very dangerous. I mean, you know, that's acceleration. It's not really speed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's becoming an even more real thing with electric cars. Because you felt the talk of an electric car.
It's incredible.
I reckon I
become a little uncomfortable anywhere north of 4 seconds. Very hard to manage a car.
We test drove the Porsche, the new Porsche 911 not so long ago, which does 0 to 100 in the 2.5 to 3 second range.
Hmm.
And our journalist said that it takes about a second or two for your brain to catch up with what is actually happening.
Right. That's maybe why I don't like anything faster than 0 to 104 seconds. It's just not very hard to process.
It's hard to process.
You literally lose the ability to see anything peripheral. Your vision, they call it tunnel vision. Your field of vision actually narrows.
So is 0 to 100 a good way to measure a car? Well, electric cars in the future may be that may be the benchmark. But a funny story.
Yeah.
Canadian officials have urged motorists not to allow a moose to lick their cars.
I'm sorry.
Apparently, moose go around licking the ice off cars because of the salt content.
So a moose tries to lick water off your car, and what, that's illegal?
Well, that's not illegal. They're just encouraging people not to allow the moose to lick the road salt off the cars. Because apparently, when the moose sees a parked car, they're walking up to it, and sometimes damaging the car. So they've got these big signs all over the place. Do not let moose lick your car.
Well, George, the problem, the real problem here is, there's a moose on the loose.
Oh, God. You know that it's one moose, many meese, right?
Oh, I don't know.
That's not fun. No, what is that?
No, it's not. I would have, if I was a mean person, I would have let you carry on thinking for the rest of your life that it's one moose, many meese.
What is the plural of moose?
Mooses.
Mooses. Yeah. It's like the mouse that you use for your computer. What's the plural of that?
Mouses.
Mouses.
Mm.
Really?
Mice.
Yeah. But I love it. We used to have a friend at varsity with us called Quibus, and we used to joke with him. We'd say, Quibus, because he always wanted to move to Canada. And we'd say to him, you know, if you move to Canada, you're going to have to learn that it's one moose, many meese. And he believes that. I think he still does. I think he still says, oh, how many meese are in this nature reserve? So, you know, he's probably still saying it right now, poor guy.
You've ruined Quibus's life.
All right. You've got to tell people shit like that. It keeps your life interesting, even if it makes it awkward for them.
Same.
No, that's it.
Yes. Very good. All right. Well, please don't go around licking the ice off cars if you're in Canada. And listen,
just try not to do that.
Those mooses can be flipping dangerous. They're huge animals, eh? They're massive, massive animals, and they can do a lot of damage to cars. People drive into meese all the time. All right,
everybody. I wonder if your tongue gets stuck on some of the ice. You know, if you take ice out of the fridge and you get these cartoon characters who lick a pole and get stuck.
And imagine waking up to that. You're about to, like, leave the house, drive to work, and there's a massive moose stuck to your car.
Just its tongue, and it's getting more and more, Canada. And it's getting more and more aggro because its tongue is stuck to the car. Yes. That'll be very bad, I'm telling you. Very good. All right, everybody. Thank you very, very much. We will see you on Monday. Have an excellent weekend in the company of cliffcentral.com. And if you haven't listened to this week's episode of Blind History, go and check that out ASAP. George, always good to see you. We'll catch up next week.
Cheers, guys.
Good stuff. George Meany. All right. Bye, everybody. CliffCentral.com